All right, you hippies. It's Richard Nixon, and it's time to talk tech.
Brilliant.
Thank you, Richard Nixon. Welcome to episode... What are we up to? Episode 3 of A Capital Duo Talk Tech.
Yep.
I am your first host, Andy White, also known as Ark White on the interwebs. And I'm here with the second host, Simon Pascal Klein, also known as Kleepass.
Interesting that you start numbering us.
Well, I'm clearly number one.
Okay.
I'm older than you.
Well,
I'm bigger than you.
Because of the conversation that we had earlier about the possibility of introducing a third person into the...
A third person? Ooh, saucy.
And the confirmation that we got.
Well, we might have to abandon the numbering system.
Are you sure?
Maybe. I figured I'd get my licks in now while I still could.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Can't play favourites, you know.
Fair enough. Should we reveal who it is?
Not yet.
Why not?
Not yet. Okay, you can't talk about that yet, because it hasn't happened yet.
Yes, it has.
It will happen.
Well, in terms of...
But it hasn't happened
yet. We've confirmed who it is.
The world could end next week, and then we'd look like a pair of twits, wouldn't we?
I think people would be less caring... No, actually, they wouldn't.
They'd be pretty upset.
Yeah,
you know, if we told them what was going to happen and it never did,
yep.
and the world had ended.
That would kind of suck. Fair, anyway, so...
Moving right along!
We should actually introduce what this is. So first, yeah, welcome to Capital Duo Talk Tech.
Where we, a Capital Duo, soon to be Trio...
You would have to rename the podcast.
Oh dear.
Oh fuck, I hadn't thought of that. Interesting.
Anyway, we talk tech.
Yeah.
We talk about things.
Things, yeah. I'm Pascal Klein. You, sir, Andy. Yeah, as usual, we always love feedback. We haven't gotten that much yet. Most of the stuff has sort of come through by Twitter or from friends and such.
I know there's quite a few people listening to us, because I've seen the website stats. Mm-hmm. So if anyone's out there and they're listening, please
send us an email.
We love email.
Yep.
We'll even read it out on the show.
We'd actually, I'd really like to have a mailbag or something going towards the end of the show that we can, like, mention, you know, call out Andy where the fuck he got wrong and it was such delightful.
Why did I get singled out?
You're the only other person here if we pick on.
Okay, fair enough.
So, to email at us, you're found at arkwhite@arkwhite.org.
And Pascal is at kleepass@kleepass.org.
Yeah, if you go to our websites, you'll find the email addresses there if you can't spell them. And, well...
There'll be a link in the show notes.
So I'm guessing if you get hold of this, you'll be able to find us somehow.
One would hope.
Yeah, the iTunes thing is definitely confirmed.
We're going to be running through Feedburner over the next... That's the plan.
That's the plan, okay. Just makes it easy to get stats.
It's a little painful to do, but yeah, I will get on that.
Cool. So if you notice a dropout for like a day in between the next podcast and now, it's probably because we're telling iTunes to switch over to the Feedburner.
I think it'll probably switch over pretty seamlessly.
Cool.
Because it'll use the same... it'll all go to the same place. It'll work out.
Sure.
So, upcoming events.
Yeah, we decided that we would give a shout out to some of the events that are going on. So first up is, and this is sort of an order of how things are happening, as in when things are happening next. There's the casual WSG, which is the Web Standards Group meetup up in Sydney. It's on the 13th, so that's just 2 days away from when we're recording this. That's on the Thursday. So the 13th of the 8th.
It's at the Pump House.
It's at Pump House in Darling Harbour, so it's quite lovely. It's a nice sort of informal catch up.
At 8:30.
At 18:30. 6:30.
Sorry, 6:30. Correct. Yeah. Quite right. 24-hour time. I've lived around it all my life, and I still can't get it right. There's a more formal Web Standards Group meeting in Sydney on the 19th. That one's sponsored by Atlassian, and there's already 80 people registered.
I last checked, which is a couple of days ago, so
it might have
bumped up a bit more. Since then. So that's usually quite worth going worth going to. That's the one. We'll put all these in the show notes as usual. So no worries about the URLs or anything at the moment. The other thing that's interesting is that Vision Australia are running 2 workshops on web accessibility in Melbourne on the 19th and 20th. So we'll put links up to that as well. There's WDS, so Web Direction South. 2009. So we'll link that in the show notes as usual, because that's definitely one heck of an awesome conference that's worth going to. Yeah.
And then there's this next one. That's in Perth, isn't it?
Edge of the Web, yeah.
I think I know someone that might be going to that one.
Yeah,
I'll be speaking. I think someone's doing a presentation, in fact.
Yes.
Funny how you snuck that one in there.
Well, I figured that they deserve a bit of a plug, considering that they're paying for me to get my butt over there and talk on type and such related things. So we'll put that up on the show.
So that's Edge of the Web.
Edge of the Web, that's in start of November.
Yep.
Yeah. And there's a usability evaluation and training workshop in Canberra on the 1st and 2nd in December. So if you're in Canberra and you want to do usability evaluation sort of stuff, we'll put links up to that as well. It'd be probably worth going to. Just to note that we're not associated with any of these.
No, other than giving presentations.
Occasionally at some of them. In terms of, well, let's put it this way. Any of the...
So here, Edge of the Web is pretty good.
I should rephrase. So any of the workshops, that you have to fork out for professional development sort of...
We're not associated. We don't get kickbacks.
No, not at all.
However, if you are one of those workshops and you'd like to give us kickbacks, please do drop us an email.
So we're going to do advertising on the show now?
Are we against selling out?
Well, I don't think we should.
Oh, we
you
probably should.
You just want the money, don't you? You've got these dollar signs in your eyes.
They're contact lenses.
Okay, so moving on. There's a few other things happening around Australia. Subscribe to the WSG announced mailing list. That's actually where we're pulling most of these dates from.
Yep.
We just cherry pick the really good stuff.
I'm going to go back to last week. I mentioned the Google Wave hackathon in Canberra, which I went along to. That was really cool, actually. We had Alan and Yen and... oh, goodness, I've forgotten names already. I'm terrible. I had this written down, except I left my notes at home. I will give them a shout-out on the website later.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, very cool. We spent most of the day making Google Wave robots and just playing around with Google Wave in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's, in a nutshell, a very powerful communication platform. I don't know if Google are angling to have it replace email. It's sort of the nightmare fusion of email, instant messenger, and the web. The sort of the rough layout of the architecture of the thing is you have messages which are at the moment done through Google's servers.
Mm-hmm.
They're opening the protocol and providing a reference implementation of Google Wave,
mm-hmm.
so that eventually we're going to have what they're calling federation, which is you'll be able to run your own...
A foundation or some bollocks?
Huh?
Haven't they sort of like a foundation or some bollocks?
Yes. There's a couple of big players getting involved. You'll be able to run your own Wave server if you so
desire.
And you'll be able to run your own Wave robots. And robots, just for a little bit of technical background, they're essentially participants in the conversation that alter the presentation or information in the conversation in some structured way. So a very simple example that I put together, which I'll post about on my blog later in the week, was an implementation of the old Eliza chatbot, which was a chatbot developed back in the 60s or 70s that would use a very simple set of regular expressions to respond to users' questions in a manner similar to a psychologist. So you'd type something like, "Oh, Eliza, I think my cat hates me." And Eliza would reply, "Why do you think your cat hates you?" It was an interesting experiment done into the way humans interact with each other and the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So that was actually really simple to put together.
And are psychologists out of a job yet?
No.
Okay.
No. Not yet.
Not yet.
I don't think Skynet's particularly interested in our human problems.
You'll get there.
One day. One day.
So let's move on to the news. So... well, we're gonna. If we had recorded this last night, we would have missed this.
We would have.
Yeah. So the big one, of course, is Facebook has acquired FriendFeed.
Dun dun dun. I don't know if it's really that big a deal.
Yeah, not really. I think the biggest thing is that.
It shows that they're trying to do new things.
Yeah, it shows they're trying to do new things, and we saw that already when they tried to acquire Twitter earlier in the year. And that didn't go through, yeah. So now they've got FriendFeed.
So a
So
a service that I do my very best to ignore, has acquired a service that I never bothered to use.
Yep, pretty much. but the important points that are worth mentioning really is that in the meantime, since trying to acquire Twitter, Facebook has implemented many of the features, or some of the features that
Friend feed.
What's that piss take that the IT crowd did? It just keeps floating up in my head. And
sorry, I have no idea what you're talking about. But
you haven't seen the IT
crowd? I haven't seen the IT crowd. I know, that's an indictment of my personality. I am a lesser person for not having seen it. But I will get a copy one day. I'll go and buy some DVDs.
Yeah,
I'll totally get that legitimately. I won't pirate anything. Yep. No way.
No way. We don't
not at all.
What are the
ramifications of Facebook and friend feed?
The biggest thing is that they're less buying Facebook. I believe that Facebook is less buying the service or the product, right? And more buying the engineers. So from what I can gather is that the dudes behind friend feed, there's 15 guys.
One of them was one of the 15, very...
I don't know if there's a lady involved there. Yeah, one of the Google founders, or at least the dude who made Gmail is involved. It's a German last name. I can't remember the life of what his name is. But yeah, so the biggest thing really is that they've acquired, I think, talent and skills more than anything else.
Mm.
14 of the 15 people who work behind the scenes at Friend Feed are engineers, and one of them made Gmail. So they're buying some brains there. Mm. The best known of these is Paul Buchheit. Don't know how you pronounce that in English. I can only think of the way of pronouncing it in German.
The nightmare pronunciation would be Buchheit, which is obviously wrong, but I would say Buchheit.
Buchheit, yeah.
Or Buchheit.
Yeah. So he's the dude that made, that created Gmail, and some of the advertising products at Google. So, and apparently actually came up with a Don't Be Evil motto, so interesting stuff.
Hmm. Especially for him to go into Facebook.
Yeah.
Which, in my opinion, could use a nice dose of Don't Be Evil.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Hello, we're going to reuse your user profile picture and put it in this ad that we're going to serve up to you, offering to hook you up with other people in your location.
Yeah, no.
Really happened, true story.
Yeah, in terms of bad.
Yeah, that's bad. That's pretty bad.
Next up is new Google search. Apparently Google are behind the scenes coming up with, a new...
Well, they're always doing this, and they've been working on some new interfaces for search for quite some time.
Yep. Apparently there's some algorithm stuff that's changing as well.
That's true,
I'm not surprised of.
The call actually went out on Twitter. I got it through James Poley, who was retweeting someone else, I forget who. Basically, www.sandbox.google.com is the new search interface that is sort of in development. They're looking for feedback on how the search algorithm works. So they're specifically interested in you doing a search and letting them know that the search results were a little bit hinky. If you think certain things shouldn't have been shown in search results or certain things should have and weren't.
If I had time.
They want to know that sort of thing. If you've got a bit of time, just to offer some feedback.
Yep. Cool. Fair enough. The cool thing that I noticed is, the interface, at least at first glance, doesn't seem to be that different. In fact, it's quite the same.
But it is
once you make a search.
That's it. So if you have a look at it, initially you'll think it's just the same old search. Do a search, and you get an interesting set of controls on the left-hand side to filter.
What's worth doing is doing a search on the current Google site, and then doing it on the sandbox.
And comparing the results you get.
I've done that. It's quite interesting, yeah. So, of course, the big question is, will this be in beta, and how fucking long will it be in beta? Probably forever.
Well, this is Google. Well, Google have pulled apps out of beta. I believe Gmail is no longer considered beta. Or there was something that they pulled out of beta that had been in beta forever and ever.
Froze over.
They just like to have a very long beta period, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So that's Google search. We'll link it in the show notes. Next up is... I just put this in here because I wanted to be wanky. For your extremely uber, weekly dose of extremo wank, go to chairwhore.blogspot.com.
You can visualize me right now rolling my eyes. Pascal, can you pull that URL up for me?
Sure.
I haven't seen that URL. I think this warrants Oh my god. Those aren't chairs. How can you sit on that? Look at those red things. You couldn't possibly sit on those. You'd have to have a massive American-sized butt, but still have a normal-sized upper body.
I think your upper body would have to have a huge dent in it to fit onto that.
It's like a chair for a beanbag. Yeah. Look, is that we've got a phallus? The little... Oh, no, those are the arms.
No, that's what you like to see in a chair.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Yeah, chair wank. So people who are interested in, you know...
Chairs.
Chairs and other...
Why is its mouth there? Why is it trying to... It's a kid's chair. I'll just... For the people who are listening at home, there's a blue chair there. It's got a mouth right where your child's backside would go. I can see the kids having nightmares about that one.
So yeah, if you want to have your dose of wank for the week supplied, go to the site. We'll link it. Just for shits and giggles.
I can't believe that there's a website devoted to wanky chairs.
There's a website devoted to everything these days.
Rule 34.
Oh, God. Shut up.
Anyway. So, I believe you wanted to talk about Jekyll and just your experiences
briefly.
With...
Just very briefly. So, it's more of a, the site is up. Go to creepypasta.org.
So, just to clarify for people who might have joined us after the first episode, Pascal recently redid his website, which was in WordPress. It was pretty recent. It was last week.
Oh, recently when it went live.
Oh, sweetie, first rule of website development, you never admit how long it took.
Oh, yeah, I did.
You did it, like, in a couple of days.
Sitting in Berlin 8 months ago, starting to do it.
Oh, dear.
That's how long it's taken.
Oh, dear.
Life. Yeah, so my new site's up. It's built in Jekyll. So just to quickly cover again, Jekyll is a static site generator.
So when you update content, it regenerates the static HTML,
essentially. The way it works is it's blog-aware. So what you do is you have a directory where you stick some posts in, and then not HTML or anything. You can just write in a simplified sort of language. So, for example, if you want to make bullets, you just put a star sign, space, and then you put in your item.
Sort of like how the notation you use when you're editing a wiki.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So, in particular, the one that comes that Jekyll uses by default is called Markdown, which you people might be familiar with. It's quite handy. So it'll do things like go through your dumb quotes and turn them into pretty quotes and other nice, useful things. So yeah, you just write posts into a post directory with, date, year, month, day, - post name. That's used for the URL. And then you create a couple of templates and you have a base template which starts off with your HTML header and sort of stuff. And then you just go, content. And then it pulls the stuff in every time you regenerate the site. And you can do stuff like run the auto flag, so it'll regenerate the site that you then have to upload. It's just HTML files, essentially, on the fly as soon as a file changes, which is quite handy. But the cool thing about it is it's lots of granular control of, you could change the styling for every single post if you so desired, which is kind of cool. So an example of this might be, although this guy isn't using it, Jason Santamaria's website, which I guess we'll put in the show notes as well. Is a designer, a very well-known designer. He works, I think, for Happy Cog or for... I think they just merged. Anyway, blah. Every single blog post is an entirely different design, and it's just amazing.
Good lord.
Yeah, really, really cool. Like, some stuff is like looks like a sketch pad, other stuff will be like modernist sort of... It's just crazy. Yeah, check it out. It's pretty cool. I use Jekyll. Just wanted to give it a plug again. And I'll be writing a... Jekyll for designer guide /how-to/ experience thing of some kind.
And you'll see that released in about 8 months' time.
Not quite, no. It'll be an article. I'll just put that up on my site at some point in the future. Because really, the documentation is okay, but in large parts lacking. And it's not really designer-friendly. So I figured, from a designer perspective, write on how to build a site in Jekyll.
Groovy.
Yeah, so that's that over. The next thing we wanted to talk about is the main feature, really. If you think in the back week, like the sort of stuff that's happened in the last week, you might be able to pick this topic before we mention it. No? Okay, well, anyway. We're talking about News Media Online.
That's a bit presumptuous. They might have just picked it.
They might have just picked it. Okay, fair enough.
If you did,
mail us or something.
Congratulations. Well done. Yeah. You're excellent.
Now the subject. So News Online, sort of news media, that sort of stuff, and the backlash that happened to the News Corp's announcement that they want to start monetizing.
Was Rupert Murdoch put out a press release, I believe,
mm-hmm.
basically stating that News Corp was going to go to a for-pay model for all of their online news and media,
yep.
which means that a lot of their content will be locked behind paywalls yep. and will be expected to hand over a monthly subscription or some other similar sort of thing to access their journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Haha, journalism, I hear some people in the background laughing. Stop that. So, yeah, News Corp. Rupert Murdoch.
So we should outline the problem really first. So I guess the way that all of this started was that 5-6 years ago, when the web was the new crazy thing, a lot of these large media companies that had money invested in a website, right? They'll put details on subscriptions on how you can add a subscription and, you know, to get the print copy. But what they started also doing was starting to migrate some of their print material online.
Online.
Yeah. So back then, though, however, most of the material was still in print, and people would generally go out and pay money at the news agents or whatnot, or pay for a subscription and get it
delivered.
They
were still buying a physical copy.
They were still buying a physical copy of paper and colour and whatnot.
Now, we should add that, you know, those websites tended to monetize the news by offering advertising, which is what a newspaper does
yeah.
in physical format. They yeah. offer advertising on a physical piece of paper that yeah. goes along with their articles.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is you come along for your fresh daily dose of news, journalism, and you get advertising in the margins, and they make money from that advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was transplanted to the web, and it turns out that on the web, advertising is really, really cheap, and it's actually quite difficult to turn a significant amount of profit from advertising.
At least as much as they've been doing on the print.
That's right.
Yeah, so, you know, 5-6 years later, they've been gradually migrating more and more content online. Sometimes it even extends rather than just supplements the media that's available
yep.
In print. And most people, or a lot of people, maybe not most, but at least a sizable number of people have moved away from the print editions. I mean, I grew up in a world where by the time that I got to the point where I wanted to read the news on a daily basis, I started doing it on a computer.
The only time I'll ever read an actual physical newspaper is if I'm in a cafe and want something to read and
it's available there in the cafe.
Don't want to necessarily read it on my iPhone.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, if I'm stuck on, you know, at an airport waiting lounge or something and one just happens to be there.
Yep.
But I will never go out and buy a newspaper.
Yeah. The only things that I these days buy occasionally is The Economist and Time magazine.
But that's not it.
So the problem really is that now they've gotten to the point that a lot of people are accessing material online and have stopped purchasing the print copies.
And we've seen newspapers crumble.
Periodicals and newspapers around the world are just falling. It's like a tree and like it's autumn's hit and the leaves are falling to the ground, yeah.
I think I've read something the other day that said that something like 50% of the physical news media outlets that existed at the turn of the century have now either been bought out by larger concerns and become just sort of regional printing houses or have gone under completely.
Well, at least the trees aren't complaining.
Well, unfortunately, the news companies certainly are. Mm. They're in a difficult position too because you know, they've had this business model that's worked quite well for them for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And now their news is getting out via the web and they're finding it a little bit more difficult to monetize. Mm. The other problem that they perceive is people using their material and not paying for it. This is one that Rupert Murdoch particularly trots out all the time. He says that one of his pet hates is, at least my understanding of his words, bloggers who've been using, for example, Sydney Morning Herald articles and not paying for the privilege somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't entirely know what he's referring to there because copyright law is pretty clear on what constitutes an infringement.
Mm.
And
if it's got a problem, why doesn't he actually...
If it's such a big problem, why don't you do something about it?
If it's pissing him off that much, why doesn't he go...
The flip side of that argument is that that's exactly what the recording industry of America are doing. They're suing the crap out of people for, you know, downloading, at least they allege, material illegally.
Yeah. So what sort of use case... Like, do you mean, like, a blogger copying and pasting?
Well, I think this is part of the problem, is that no one really understands exactly what Rupert Murdoch's talking about there, but I think he's talking about people who are taking articles wholesale and republishing them somewhere to draw eyeballs to their own blog.
How many times have these various media companies just copied and pasted a press release?
Well, the number of times the local rag, the Canberra Times, for example, has been...
The local rag, that's a good way of describing it.
Wouldn't give them much more
description
than that. They've been known to steal content from one of the local not volunteer run. It was actually one of the local blogs, the Riot Act.
Yep, one of the actually the biggest community run news slash events slash whatever disseminating website that we have here in the ACT.
Sadly, it's the admin John Boy announced his resignation
from
the Riot Act.
Because I know him. Fuck, are you serious?
Yeah, apparently it's taken a great toll on him, and he's no longer willing to continue.
Is someone else stepping in?
Well, he's talking about a changing of the guard, and it looks like it's going to become a much more community-driven affair.
Cool. So less one-man operation?
Yeah, but much less monetized. He had a great deal of difficulty actually turning a profit out of the Riot Act. They were using the advertising model as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, being in Canberra, that's always going to make your life a little bit more difficult because there's only 350,000 people in the city, give or take.
350,000 of us wankers here.
Yeah. So, you know, he got himself into a very heavy situation in terms of work and his personal security because there are a lot of nutbags out there.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, poor John Boy has had to hand in his resignation. So I guess, you know, in a sense, that's kind of the problem that the big news companies are facing in a microscopic...
And we hear predominantly from the big ones and less from the little ones that it is dying, like, so quick. Like, what? Like they'll lose, you know...
And what do you
do? A couple of hundred subscribers, and they'll go, we can't afford to hire the people to make out the next issue, and they're gone.
Mm.
As opposed to these large media corporations that are bitching and moaning, like News Corp, the big one. So, yeah, it's just I think it's worth mentioning that there are so many untold stories of the folks that
and there's never get a voice. This is a huge problem that goes, you know, all the way from the big boys, you know, sitting up in Sydney, or you know, the New York Times or whatever, all the way down to the local
reporter,
you know, information on the internet is so easy to copy that it's effectively free to do
to
so.
To duplicate, yeah.
Duplication and dissemination on the internet are solved problems. So how do you turn the work that your journalists are doing into money? And now I've heard a lot of people say at this point, well, a lot of the work that News Corp's journalists, quote-unquote, are doing isn't what they would consider good journalism. And
so
the reason that
I would consider good journalism, mostly.
An argument can be made that...
That's not to counter their argument entirely. That's just, I'm sorry, guys, that's one of the problems you guys have got. And
the reason why people laugh at you so much is that... Let's not paint every reporter who's working at the Sydney Morning Herald with the same brush, for example. You know, some of them are doing... Then again, we are talking about a company that allows Miranda Devine to publish as a op-ed. It seems to me, and you know, this might just be the fact that I'm starting to get old, that journalism has become a lot less about telling the truth and much more about
sensationalism. Yep.
Now, I'm sure people have been saying this since, you know, the turn of last century, but it seems like it's getting a lot worse. You know, you don't see... I was reading an article the other day on... It was on Time Magazine in their health section online. It was a big, big article, which made the bold claim that exercise was no way to lose weight.
That's the current issue.
Yeah. Exercise is no way to lose weight because people get hungrier after exercise and they eat more, and so they end up undoing all of their hard work. And the whole article was just this deck of cards built to carefully avoid the idea that, or you know, the simple response that yes, that's true. You do get hungrier after you exercise. But if you really want to lose weight, you've got to have this little thing called willpower.
Yeah.
And you've got to not eat like a pig all the time.
Yeah. Looking forward to the day where it becomes socially acceptable to harass fat people.
Oi!
Well, at least some of them. I mean, look...
Let's leave that one before we entirely
finish, you can smack me down as much as you want, and maybe I should clarify, but... So, to clarify, it is socially acceptable to harass smokers. Oh, you're smoking near my children. Oh, you're smoking near me, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, even though we're sitting outside...
Being fat doesn't make children next to you get
fat. Yeah, sure,
fat.
Sure, but on the other hand, it's like a...
Unless you sit on them.
Unless you sit on them.
Then they get flat, not fat. They get
flat, yep. Well, it's kind of like a...
That was really awful. Here I am telling you off, and what do?
Dig your own grave. Yeah. So it's like, you know, people can harass smokers. Oh, why are you smoking? It's bad for you. And it's like, why can't I say, well, don't have that fourth dessert?
I guess, but I mean, there are people out there too who have a great deal of difficulty controlling their weight because of various.
People out there who have control. Number of people with problems that just can't give up smoking. A different debate entirely. We've gone to a huge rat hole.
But, we have. Yeah. But I don't disagree with you. I just don't quite agree with you.
Okay, maybe I just said it too harshly. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Anyway, moving back to News Corp.
Moving back to News Corp, yeah.
So, how do you make money as a big newspaper out of... all the people who want to read your news.
Well, let's look at it this way. Are there any that are currently making enough money and predominantly selling stuff online?
Well, the paywall thing's been tried before. Wall Street Journal, I believe, had a paywall for quite some time. No, I don't think they have a paywall.
HuffPo? They don't?
I don't think so.
Huh.
I believe all
of them. How are they making their money?
They're making their money off advertising, but they only have a very small staff of...
That's true.
...actual reporters and fact-checkers, and most of the stuff is that comes across them is community-driven,
mm-hmm.
Which is a model that other organisations may have to consider, but...
Well, maybe do we have to consider laying off people simply because they're too large?
Well, that's like that's because
the other possibility is with a larger number of employees, the chances of getting people who aren't that good for the job would increase.
The advantage of... the internet and the way news is done now is that you could do a hell of a lot more with a hell of a lot less.
Yeah.
You don't need to run big expensive printing presses. You don't need to have, designers. Well, you do need to have designers for the web version, but once you've got a web design done, you can use essentially the same format. To a large
degree, though, that...
Page layout's a bit less of a problem, for example.
They have templates as well, very much so.
True.
Yeah, true.
My point is, you know, maybe they can downsize, and I don't know whether they're looking at, I'm sure this has crossed their minds, whether they can become a lighter organization and spend less money to make the same or less amounts of money, but still remain profitable. Mm. There's a fundamental problem with what Rupert Murdoch is proposing, which is that we've already got the content for free.
Yep.
People don't like to have something for free and then have it taken away.
Quite well taught over the last half a decade that getting news for free on the internet
is the norm.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
So, and there's some deeper ramifications here too. Like, if with a physical copy of a newspaper, they're very cheap. So, what, 80 cents is $1.20? To buy a physical copy of the newspaper.
Yeah.
But
if you want... Well,
Wait. I'm going somewhere with this. That one copy can then be passed around to multiple people. So if you've got a group of people who are in a disadvantaged situation, you know, they may be living in a shelter or some sort of halfway house, there's still a way for people who may not be in a strong financial situation, who can't afford a monthly subscription to... the Sydney Morning Herald or local paper of choice, there's still ways for them to get their news.
Yep.
With this sort of option, focusing on the web version and putting all the content behind a paywall...
High barrier of entry.
You're raising a barrier of entry to people who might not have the money or the capability to get their news that way.
And not just disadvantaged people. Look at students. Look at people who write in the academic scene who need to reference stuff. Now we've got to pay to see an article to find a quote in it. Like, we need to pay to do research, get that, yeah. We need to pay to do the research to some extent.
What will probably happen is that universities will have some sort of...
Well, they already do a large degree.
Yeah.
But it still kind of sucks.
It definitely sucks. Hmm. On the flip side, you know, these businesses do have to stay in the money somehow.
I think the only option then maybe to be to downsize, do what HuffPo does.
Mm.
I get. Oh, well, I know that The Economist charges for their podcast.
Mm.
Like they have a bunch of podcasts for free. Like they've got like, for example, in every edition of The Economist. Actually, I've got one here. In every edition of The Economist, you've got The Week Ahead up the front, which is actually really worth looking at. It showcases stuff that's going to happen in the coming week. It's like a news.
What, do they have a team of psychics?
Well, not quite, but they look at like conferences and meetings and things that are happening, and then they get specialists who know about that to talk about it.
Okay.
So it gives you some insight what to look forward to in the coming week, which I find really, really useful. Now, that 2-page spread is a 10 to 15 minute podcast weekly. And they go to greater length often in the podcast. That podcast is free. You'll find it on iTunes and I guess on The Economist website. And there's a couple of others, like when they do a special report, which is like a 5-to-something-page report, they sometimes occasionally make that into a podcast, which is really quite cool. And it'll go beyond it. It's not like just reading from the paper. It's like an actual discussion with the guy who did the research and wrote the article. So, yeah. But I know that the majority of the stuff that's available from The Economist is paper for that.
You have to pay to access.
You've got to pay to consume. Sorry, yeah, jumbling.
Pay to consume.
Pay to consume. Yeah. So there are only small highlights from the magazine from each issue is each monthly issue or whatever is used, not monthly, bi-weekly or whatever it is.
Mm.
Issue is used for the free podcasts that are available, but you can get pretty much the entire and more as a subscription model.
So they're offering sort of extra premium content for some charge.
Audio content too.
Yeah.
Yep.
But not their typical, I mean, the web version of the print stuff is available for free?
I don't know. I think...
We should clarify too that The Economist is a very widely read journal.
Very, very widely.
I mean, we're talking worldwide audience. We're not talking, you know, just trying to sell to Australia, which is ultimately only 22, 23 million people.
Yep.
I mean, realistically, over here, News Corp, I mean, News Corp have concerns all around the world. They're a much bigger corporation than just Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But looking, for example, at the Sydney Morning Herald, I'm really picking on them, aren't I?
And rightly so, to some degree.
Even news.com.au or The Australian, their viewership, for the most part, is 22 million people, which is the size of a city, even a small city in some other countries.
Mm.
So, you know, the model that they're applying over there for some of these journals obviously isn't going to work over here because it would be like trying to do the same thing for a city.
It might not. It depends.
I don't know if a lot of these things scale down.
Necessarily that the readership in terms of like socioeconomic class is going to differ that greatly between a newspaper that's for the masses and covers things like, you know, your basic politics, your basic world news, your basic, you know, just and a good section on sports and a good section of advertisements is not going to be roughly similar in another country.
I guess.
The distinction is that The Economist is a special interest magazine, whereas The Australian is a general newspaper.
Yes, that's true.
I don't think...
They're talking about applying the paywall to all of these properties.
Oh, that's not necessarily going to work.
No, I mean, you need to look at your target demographics and work out, you know, whether the people that you're trying to work, you know, trying to sell to actually really want to pay money for this stuff. Because the average person doesn't pay a hell of a lot of money for their print copy of the newspaper.
Yep. Actually, while we're on this, I'm just going to put a brief rant in. University academic periodicals. Oh my god, a fucking pain to get a hold of as a student currently. The ANU subscribes to a reasonably decent range. The ANU website is shit. Now, so yes, that's not the fault of these guys, it's the fault of your university or whatever.
Well,
tertiary provider. Well, the thing that sucks is that a large number of the periodicals that I'm interested in A, cost $130+ per issue.
Jesus.
Which is way too expensive. And B, doesn't allow me to preview the content decently.
So you have to pay money, and then you might get something that's, interesting.
That
or
pertains to the studies, or that you can't reference, or it's just not, nothing to do with what you're writing about. So if you're a periodical provider in Australia, and have a look at your services and ask yourself the question of, are enough uni students getting hold of my periodical? And if not, why not? And yes, you can charge, it's fine, but charge us a smaller amount, or at least make sure that we can get, there's like a better way of getting access to it.
Yeah. We had the same problem at the University of Canberra. There's a proxy that we have to go to get access to scientific journals, for example.
Yep, that's the way it works at the ANU.
That proxy is mandated because of the way the technology works.
Mm-hmm.
They have to force you through a single choke point so that they can do the authentication with these various journals.
Exact same way that the ones that I use work, yeah.
And it's a bitch. It doesn't work very well. If everybody's trying to access content, you know, it dies very quickly because it's a single point of failure. The web interface isn't particularly good.
It's backwards from, like, mid-90s to some degree.
Why is there not some infrastructure in place for individual university students to get access to these periodicals based on, you know, the fact that they're studying at a university?
And I guess the reason why these guys don't care is because, to a large degree, universities around the world are paying for them to get access. And a lot of students don't know or find it too hard to access the materials.
Yeah.
So they're already being paid.
And it shouldn't be hard to access these materials. I mean,
piss easy.
This is the sort of stuff that if you're going to university, you should really be paying attention to.
Yeah.
My undergraduate courses were woefully short of actual scientific material for the most part.
Yep.
Recent research. We were talking a lot of the time about concepts that were Stone Age by comparison to the stuff that's really happening. I am in IT.
You are in IT.
But, you know, and University of Canberra is not exactly a massive university. But still, it should be a lot easier.
Bitch on UC there for a second.
No, they're just not massive. They're massive. Relatively small compared to other universities.
Yeah. What I ended up doing was I contacted a friend up at the University of Griffith in Queensland. And she is studying in roughly the same field that I was. And she had access to the periodical that I wanted to get access to. Whereas the ANU said it did, but didn't.
Oh, dear.
Like, it was listed in the library catalogue that that was available, and you could click on a link and it would take you through the portal, and it just didn't work. And, like, it's so cryptic. Like, the link was there, and I was like, yes, the ANU pays the subscription. Click on here if you're an ANU student or staff member. You click through, and then you get a login, password field, and a username.
Why are we making it hard for our academics?
And I'm just like, what do I type in there? And this is off of InfoWorld or whatever it's called, the periodical provider. And I'm just like, well, do I type in my uni password? Do I type in, do you have a separate system going?
It was cryptic. Yep.
It was really cryptic. And on the other hand, it could suck because that's my uni password I could type in there by accident or something. Anyway, we've dived off slightly, but related-ish.
So, News Corp. Well, the thing I'm seeing on Twitter at the moment is I think Mark Pesci made the comment. It was pretty good.
It was pretty good. If I can pull it up.
Pull it up.
It's worth. So we should quick background who Mark Pesci is.
He's a host or a judge on The New Inventors.
On The New which is an Australian
television show on ABC.
Yeah.
And they review new inventions that, you know, people come onto the show with their wonderful new invention. A lot of them are looking for more money to make the invention really go somewhere. And it's basically just a showcase of the really cool, innovative stuff that a lot of Australians are doing.
So he has quite a well-followed Twitter account, and today his tweet was, I've decided to put my tweets behind a paywall. You can all pay a subscription if you'd like to read them. YouTube, Rupe. Which is, of course, to Rupert Murdoch. So,
Well, it's actually a piece of insightful commentary, which is that the new model of media, Twitter, for example, the participatory model, is people gain value from each other's contributions.
Yep.
It's not coming from some anointed source.
Yep.
It's coming from everyone, and everybody helps out and pitches in. And the signal-to-noise ratio, you know, is a little more weighted in favor of noise than signal than in the traditional authoritative model.
But
it's still, you know, it's pretty cool. Everyone can feel like they're part of the world, and everyone can participate, and everyone's got a voice.
Yep.
As long as you've got access to the internet.
And fuckers like us can disseminate a hour-long...
Ramble
of
on
stuff.
Podcast form.
Yeah, in podcast form, with little to no cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Which, if you disregard us, is a reasonably decent thing to do.
That said, that model doesn't really work very well for journalism.
That's true.
A typical journalist, a good journalist, I'll clarify here, spends hours fact-checking, interviewing people, you know, actually going places and examining things. I'm looking here more at the Time Magazine sort of model of reporting, where reporters actually go into a place and, you know, report on events that are happening, as opposed to the press release journalism that you see happening quite often in Australia, where people will just take a press release and rewrite with some fairly minimal fact-checking.
I think the best way to say it is that the guys behind Time and their cover stories usually, very likely, are decent quality journalists.
Yes.
Who get paid.
Which isn't to say that the people working at local rags aren't decent journalists.
But there's definitely a trend in... I put it this way. I regard the stuff that comes out of the Times to be better journalism than the stuff that roughly comes out of things like, you know, The Australian and other various local newspapers.
Right, but they're aimed at different markets.
They're aimed at entirely different markets.
One of them's a monthly
yep.
periodical, and the other one's a... twice daily in some cases.
Yep.
You know, they're different modes of delivery.
Yep.
So how can we make journalism on the web work? How can we make it worthwhile for a real journalist to get news out to people on a fairly timely basis?
Thank fuck it's not my problem. That's all I got to say. To some degree, they're at their own fault because they've been putting this stuff online more and more. To the point where not just only supplementing, but adding extra stuff, if not like more stuff online than there is in the print editions. I don't know. It's another point of change where technology clashes with existing business models.
I guess at the end of the day, we're taking it for granted that the advertising on the websites isn't necessarily, you know, that profitable for them. We're taking their business model for granted. The things that they're saying are, we're having trouble with this business model, you know, we're losing print readers, people are coming online, we're not making as much money. But who's to say that they're not just making a grab for more money? Because on the face of it, this could be a very easy grab for more cash.
I think Rupert Murdoch could easily dish out a couple of million from his private stack and keep the company going for a bit longer.
Especially if he wanted to downsize and streamline operations.
So, sorry Rupert Murdoch, I can't really sympathize too much.
Put it this way, are you going to pay for a subscription to your... local and or national newspapers?
No.
I'm not.
No. No way.
Hell no.
Put it this way, I run Adblock Plus in Firefox, so I don't even see the advertisements. And some of the advertisements are so insidious and annoying and horrible.
Sydney Morning Herald. Actually, I'm going to make this the fuck you of the week.
Yep.
Sydney Morning Herald, fuck you for including advertising on your website that plays a video or audio when I load the page. This is not 1998. You are not Geocities or GeoCities.
Yeah, that's pretty shit.
I can work out how to hit the play button if I'm interested in hearing the sound. I don't need you to just magically do things for me that are really irritating when I'm trying to listen to good music.
Yep. Yep, and exactly. In fact, any website, if you want to, if you play a sound by default when you visit the website, seriously ask yourself, do you need to do that? Because too often... I'll be reading something and I'll be like, open tab, open tab, open tab, open tab, and I'll open five more tabs of stuff that I want to get to next. And then all of a sudden, one of them starts playing music. And I'm like,
you've got to go through all of them.
And I've got to go all of them. And I need to like copy the URL, close the window. If the sound stops, then I know that it's that one. Otherwise, yep. I need to open a new tab and paste the URL in again to load that page that I was going to be interested in.
Though, I will say at this point, if there's any Firefox developers out there, if you could give me a volume control on my browser, that'd be really neat.
That'd be kind of cool. On the other hand, just use Adblock Plus.
Yeah, that works too. But, I mean...
Like, what I meant to say was earlier is you asked the question, would I be willing to pay for news in regards to national news and local news?
Because I guarantee you it's still going to have advertising on it.
Yes, it will. And the answer is no, I won't. I will not. I've grown up in a world of the last 5-6 years where I don't have to pay for that.
But what happens if there's no news available for free? What happens if you have to?
That's when I'll start. But I think there'll be... That situation probably won't arise.
You reckon?
I don't think that would.
Because all of the big players...
They'll downsize or they'll do something else. The news will continue to flow.
All of the big players here in Australia are talking about going to a pay model.
How many people will accept that?
Don't know. That's what they're trying to find out. I think their logic is that if everybody does it at the same time, we'll all just kind of somnolently wander into this world of paywalls. Because we have no other option.
I might go out on a limb here and say that I think they will be very surprised at the small number of people who sign up.
Well, we've seen the internet.
And even then, are they going to offer advertising then? If I pay for something, I expect to see no ads at all.
Well, look at what happened with Foxtel. Yes, we're going to give you cable television, Australia, and it's going to have no advertisements. Oh, wait, well, we're just going to do a little ad spot at the end of your show. Oh, and we've decided this year that we might add just a little bit more advertising at the start of the show as well. Yep. 30 seconds. Oh, it's 2000. Well, we're going to add just a couple of ads in the middle of your show, you know, just because we're not making enough money. And we've got to keep this thing going. You love your quality programming.
Yep.
So, the dream of Foxtel, advertising free television, rapidly went away. And I don't know if you've watched pay-per-view television recently, but it's just as bad as free-to-air.
Yeah.
So you pay the money to get the channels and you still get bombarded with advertising.
I don't even watch much free-to-air. Like,
Me either. I don't watch television anymore.
The only reason I watch television is because my parents have bought a television and I still happen to live at home because I'm a poor buggering... No, I'm not really a poor uni student. There are other reasons for being at home. But the main
That's right, the internet. You heard it here first. Pascal still lives with his mum.
Hey, that's an awesome thing. The food, the quality... You know how much awesome food there is. You save it just this evening yourself.
Quiet, you.
So yeah, did you say it? The only reason I have access to a television is because I live in a house where other people have purchased a television. And the only time it gets turned on is at dinner time when we want to watch ABC World News. I don't see myself paying for it. And I already block all the advertisements anyway. So, and I will not switch off Adblock Plus for... SydneyMorningHerald.com.
Look, I think if they all go to this paywall model, there's going to be...
quite a backlash.
Well, there's going to be a real industry for a new startup to offer community-driven news. You know, still maybe some sort of account with Associated Press and Reuters or whatever.
That'd be cool, yeah.
There's a startup opportunity there.
Yep. I think any time a technology changes and forces people to question existing business models, potentially new business models, and new avenues of revenue arise.
Yes.
And smart people who get in that niche in time and are the first to deliver a quality product are going to make a decent amount of money.
Well.
Potentially.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah. It's going to be an interesting time. So,
That's that covered, I think, reasonably well. What do we want to...
We've had the...
The other thing we wanted to mention briefly, the pros and cons of sort of the enforcement copyright. What was the deal with that? I haven't been following this case too much. So what did Rupert want to do?
They're talking about enforcing copyright more strictly. As in, if you use part of an article in such a way that it contravenes Australian copyright law, they might send attack lawyers after you, for example. Or force you to license the content. Which is really great for, you know, participation and discussion in the community.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
wonderful.
And raises questions, and academics and whatnot will certainly... It may affect them.
Once again, it's the music downloading story writ small.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
information... it's a cheesy thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Information wants to be free, and we want it to be free as in beer. I think they're going to have a great deal of difficulty going into the future.
Mm. Potentially, yeah.
So, we've had our fuck you for the week. Do we have a tip of the cap? Tip of the cap? Anyone you want to give a tip of the cap to?
Fuck. Man, we had the same problem last week.
Well, I'm going to officially join the cult of Mark Pesci. Mm. I'm going to give my tip of the cap to Mark Pesci.
Pretty all right, cool guy, yeah. Do you follow him?
I do.
So yeah, we'll link him as well.
Tip of the cap.
Guy worth following.
And we can say tip of the cap. That was a Triple J radio segment on Friday afternoons with Scott Dooley, but he's dropped it. So we're giving it a new home. Here it is, tip of the cap.
That's fair enough. I think that's about it, really.
I think that is it from us this week.
Do we want to... Shall we mention the name, the person who might be...
No, it's a secret. It's a secret. You've got to keep our loyal audience
waiting. Can we mention that we've got some interviews lined up in the future?
We can mention
that. Can we mention a name there?
Oh, I think we can mention a couple of names.
Okay, so there is a certain peer war. Very large...
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah, very large name in the, general Australian web, tech, IT, now government as well.
Well, she's currently the senior policy advisor to Senator Kate Lundy, who is very quietly doing wonderful things in Australian government.
Yep, open government, some free culture related stuff as well.
She's on Twitter. I would highly encourage you to follow Senator Lundy on Twitter. We'll put up a link a little bit later on.
Politicians I can actively currently say that I have quite a bit of respect for.
She is well informed and wants to be well informed. She's doing her very best to get across all the issues, and she's very proactive in seeking out good solutions, and not just solutions that benefit her politically. She's looking at solutions that
benefit
everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
So you know what? There we go. There's our second tip of the cap. Second tip of the cap to Senator Kate Lundy and Pia Wall.
And Pia Wall. Yeah, I think that's worth. So we've definitely got Pia confirmed to some degree.
Yep.
And Pia's mentioned that Senator Kate Lundy will have an Australian politician on the show is quite interested as well.
In talking to us.
In talking to two of us. So it'll be the two of us talking to the two of them. So that would be really, really cool.
We'll be rubbing elbows with the hoi polloi.
Yeah. Exactly. So Pia's husband, Jeff Wall, is another big figure in the
open source world.
Open source, tech, whatever, now government a bit
as well. He was heavily involved in GNOME. In GNOME,
he was the release manager of GNOME for at least a year, if not a couple more years.
Quite some time.
Yeah, yeah. He sat on, I think, the Linux Australia board and...
Did he squash it?
No, I didn't think he squashed it. Hush!
No, that's not what I meant. No, I didn't mean it like that. I just meant... Oh, dear.
You fucked yourself now, haven't you?
Sorry, Jeff. Didn't mean it that way, mate.
Yeah, so we'd like to get him on, and he's going to talk to us about cool WordPress stuff. He's been doing some stuff for Crikey.com.
He has? WordPress. He was tweeting about that quite some time ago.
Crikey.com being...
.com.au.
Yeah, being... How would you best describe it for people who might not be aware of it or international folk?
It's a... Very I'd like to call it a blog.
Blog slash news slash community focus.
It's a news outlet. It's sort of not dissimilar to the Huffington Post, but
more
much
based.
More Australian too.
Yeah, Australian.
It's got a bit more of that Australian sense of humour.
Good writers on there.
Yep.
And he's been doing stuff in regards to high performance server
WordPress.
And client side WordPress stuff, optimizations. So that's Jeff. Do we want to mention anyone else?
Do we have anyone else actually confirmed?
Not confirmed.
There was the guys from... Weren't we talking to the guys from Open Atrium? They're not confirmed
Not confirmed. So I had a chat to Eric from Development Seed. The
guys behind Open Atrium. Which we will get around to reviewing.
Yes, we will.
We've started the review process. It just wasn't ready in time for this podcast.
Yep. So I had a chat with Eric, who up in DC, in Washington DC, the co-founder behind Development Seed, who made Open Atrium, the Drupal extension that basically gives you like the equivalent of Basecamp for free in Drupal. He mentioned that we could get hold of one of their developers, by name of Ian, I believe, and have a chat to him regarding Open Atrium. So we'll do our review.
and we'll talk about the review, and then we'll have a chat to him about it. And
hopefully we won't have offended them so badly that they don't want to talk to us.
But after the review?
Well, I don't think it'll be a bad review, but, you know, if we were unnecessarily harsh, they might not want to talk to us anymore.
Fair enough, if you think that we could embarrass them and piss them off in any way, but okay.
It's possible.
Fair enough.
I mean, they might see that chair site you linked to earlier. I mean, that alone would be enough to put me off talking to us.
Fair enough. I think that's the main people we've really got lined up. Actually, I'll put one more out there. This is going to be the first you hear of this because I've been trying to give you a phone call.
Wait. So you're going to talk about getting an interview with someone who hasn't even agreed to do an interview with us.
But I think she quite will because we're good friends. So Donna Benjamin, who's doing cool stuff with Open Education, lives down in Melbourne. She's actually currently writing a book on Inkscape. Donna, if you're hearing this is
we'd like to do an interview with you, please.
I've been trying to give her a call and I couldn't get through to her date yesterday. So, I'd like to get an interview up with her. I think she'd be quite interested.
All right. Well, before you give any other shout outs to people that we might interview, I think it's time to call it quits.
Yep.
So, thank you for listening once again to episode
3
of A Capital Duo Talk Tech.
We won't do any stupid hex or whatever geeky numbering.
No. It's just integers.
The Software Freedom Law Show, I think, uses octal or some bollocks, and it's just ridiculous trying to follow. I'm just like, I can understand the sentiment, guys, but
So, thank you for listening, and hopefully we'll talk to you again next week.
Mm-hmm.
Good night.
Definitely. Good night. Cheers.